Unsettling news from the World Health Organization.
We are announcing B11529 as a variant of concern named Omicron.
What do we know about the new COVID variant and why it has scientists worried?
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Kelsey Snell. This is Up First from NPR News.
Dow had its worst day of the year on Friday after the announcement about the Omicron variant.
It wasn't just the U.S. There were also sharp sell-offs in Europe and Asia.
We'll hear why that is and what may happen next.
And Stephen Sondheim has died at age 91.
The revered composer and lyricist wrote landmark musicals, including Company, Follies, Into the Woods, and Sweeney Todd.
We'll remember his work and how he influenced American musical theater.
So please stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend.
A new coronavirus variant identified in South Africa has scientists and world leaders worried.
The World Health Organization has designated it a variant of concern and given it the Greek letter, Omicron.
To try to contain its spread, many countries, including the United States, are restricting travel from South Africa and several other countries in the region.
NPR health correspondent Ritu Chatterjee joins us. Ritu, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
What have scientists discovered at this point about Omicron that has them so openly worried?
So it's still early days, but there are several red flags. One, the variant's detection coincided with a steep increase in cases in South Africa. And in just less than 2 weeks, it's dominating all infections there. About 75% of cases are now caused by Omicron. And preliminary evidence suggests it also has a higher risk of reinfection. So if you've gotten infected once, the chances that you might be infected again may be higher with this one. So the WHO says the variant may have some advantages over other variants.
And as you said, South Africa seems to have been hit early by the new variant. But as well, it has been detected in other countries, hasn't it?
That's right. And I should add that the CDC put out a statement last night saying that this variant hasn't been detected in the U.S. yet, but it's already been found in Botswana, Israel, Belgium, and Hong Kong. And scientists have been looking closely at Omicron's mutations to understand why it's spreading so fast. The WHO's Dr. Maria van Kerkhove spoke at a press conference yesterday.
This variant has a large number of mutations, and some of these mutations have some worrying characteristics.
So some mutations that the variant has can make it more contagious. Some can make the virus more effective at infecting cells. But what we don't know yet is how all those mutations work together to change, say, how the virus is spreading, how sick it can make you if you get infected, and very importantly, how it interacts with vaccines. And top scientists in the world are taking it very seriously and trying to answer those questions.
What does the World Health Organization suggest that countries do in the meantime?
So they're asking countries to amp up surveillance of the virus so we can have a better picture of where the variant is, how it's behaving. It's asking countries to do more testing. The variant can be detected using the currently available PCR tests, which is good. It's also asking countries to share data with the agency as well as with each other through publicly available databases so scientists worldwide can study it and so we can get more quickly get a handle on the variant. The WHO's Dr. van Kerkhove reminded individuals that existing public health measures remain important for preventing the virus's spread and also to keep new variants from emerging.
What's really important as an individual is to lower your exposure. These proven public health measures have never been more important. Distancing, wearing of a mask, making sure that it's over your nose and mouth with clean hands, making sure you avoid crowded spaces, be in rooms where there's good ventilation.
And of course, getting vaccinated because we know vaccines work well against Delta, which is still the predominant variant worldwide.
NPR health correspondent Ritu Chatterjee, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott.
Friday saw a massive sell-off on Wall Street.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 1,000 points before it rebounded slightly yesterday.
All of that came on the heels of the WHO's announcement about the new Omicron variant.
NPR's David Gura joins us. David, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Scott.
Worst day for the Dow all year on Friday. And that's not the only indication investors are just a little shaken, is it?
No, the Dow sell-off was the most dramatic, Scott, and the index ended the day down about 2.5% after what was a really volatile day of trading. But All the major indexes dropped by more than 2% each, and while U.S. markets started to fall right after the opening bell in New York, this was really a global phenomenon. There were also sharp sell-offs in Europe on Friday and across Asia as well. This wasn't just restricted to stocks either. Oil prices also dropped dramatically. They were down about 11%. Futures fell. When there's a sell-off like this, investors will put their money in other assets that are perceived to be safer. They rotate out of stocks. And indeed, Scott, that's what happened on Friday. There was higher demand for U.S. government bonds, for instance.
And we can see where this might happen with so much uncertainty over a newly identified variant, after all.
Absolutely. And something we hear over and over again from policymakers is the virus is still in the driver's seat. It is determining the pace of the economic recovery, which, as you know, is still a really fragile thing. A few weeks ago, international travel opened up again after many months. It became a lot easier to go from, say, the U.S. to Europe. And that was a signal moment. It was seen as a really important shift. Now we're seeing the opposite happen. Right after this announcement from the WHO, many governments, including the U.S., put new restrictions in place. Non-U.S. citizens, residents from eight countries, including South Africa, Mozambique, and Botswana, are now under new restrictions. And that's added to Wall Street's worry. There was a bit of deja vu from the early days of the pandemic. Travel stocks took a big hit. Shares of airlines were down, along with shares of hotel chains and cruise lines. Just another indication how there's this fear a new variant could upend progress that we've seen and really set everything back. And one thing I want to add is this is also kind of deja vu as well. On the flip side, a handful of what are called pandemic stocks did really well on Friday. The share price of Zoom went up, for instance, Scott, and the same is true of Peloton.
David, let's note at the same time the stock market has been setting records all year. So how seriously should we regard a one-day drop?
Yeah, context is critical here. The sell-off happened at a time when there is record spending in this country. Unemployment is very low in the U.S. The economy is, in many ways, much stronger than it has been when we faced new concerns about COVID-19 before. And on top of that, right before this happened, Wall Street really rallied around President Biden's pick of Jerome Powell for a second term at the Fed Reserve. The sell-off was also a surprise because of when it happened, Scott. Traditionally, the day after Thanksgiving on Wall Street is pretty quiet. The trading day is a few hours shorter than usual. When there are swings, they can be dramatic, in part because trading volume is so low. Not much trading is happening. Last point I want to make is you never want to extrapolate too much from one day. The stock market, as you say, has been doing incredibly well. And even though it ended the week down because of Friday's sell-off, the major indexes are still not far from setting new records.
David, what could this new variant mean for markets in the immediate future?
A lot depends on how severe this variant turns out to be, and also if there are going to be further restrictions on travel or more lockdowns. I should say we've been here before. Think back to how markets reacted after the Delta variant was identified. Stocks fell, then climbed up again, continuing what's been this record-setting run. You know, right now, the Fed is expected to raise interest rates as soon as next year because of high inflation. If the economy were to take a big hit because of this, we could see the Fed reconsider those plans. But I want to emphasize, Scott, these are early days yet, as Ritu said just a moment ago. It's too soon to forecast what's going to happen and how much of an effect it's going to have.
NPR's David Gura, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Stephen Sondheim, a colossal figure in American theater, died yesterday at the age of 91.
He was among the most influential Broadway songwriters of all time. Wrote the lyrics to the classic West Side Story and the music and lyrics to musicals that included Company, Sweeney Todd, and Into the Woods.
Sometimes people leave you halfway through the wood. Do not let it grieve you. No one leaves for good.
Joining us now to remember Stephen Sondheim is Jeff London, who covers theater for NPR. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Sondheim wrote the lyrics to West Side Story when he was only 27 and went on to have a decades-long career. For those who don't know his words by heart, what were the hallmarks of his work?
Well, Sondheim wrote complicated, sophisticated musicals, but he also comes from a long musical theater tradition. He learned at the feet of one of its masters, Oscar Hammerstein, who wrote Showboat, Oklahoma, South Pacific, among others. And Sondheim took the ball and ran with it. His unique genius is that he was equally adept at writing both music and lyrics. He created intricately crafted scores with dazzling wordplay, and he elevated what was essentially a lighthearted, optimistic commercial entertainment into an art form. He had a restless curiosity, and he and his collaborators, among them Hal Prince and James Lapine, took musicals to places you wouldn't expect. They looked at the dark side of the American dream in shows like Follies and Assassins. In Company, he dealt with marriage and ambivalence. Sweeney Todd was about a mass murderer whose accomplice bakes his victims into meat pies. And Sondheim even took on the art of making art in Sunday in the Park with George, which won him a Pulitzer. So not typical ideas for musicals.
And it's also worth noting that his work was iconic, but never really a commercial success as much as an artistic one.
Right. It should also be said that he won half a dozen Tony Awards for his work. But no, none of his shows ran for more than 1,000 performances. They didn't have that kind of popularity that, say, some of Hammerstein's hits had. But, you know, if you're talking about hits, Sondheim only had one hit song, Send in the Clowns from A Little Night Music. But most of Sondheim's work couldn't be divorced from the shows they were written for. He wrote specifically for plot and character. And it took a while for some critics to get what he was up to. He frequently got knocked for being cold, cerebral, writing tunes you couldn't hum. But all along, there were loyal fans who felt his songs had a lot of heart. Sondheim said he was always writing with the audience in mind. Here's a clip from an interview with Terry Gross in 2010.
I'm interested in the theater because I'm interested in communication with audiences. Otherwise, I would be in concert music. I would be in another kind of profession. No, I love the theater as much as I love music. And the whole idea of getting across to an audience and exciting them or making them laugh or making them cry or just making them feel is paramount to me.
You know, the more his shows got revived over the years, the more people grew to appreciate them. He's got a revival of Company on Broadway right now, Assassins off Broadway. So over the years, Sondheim went from being a cult figure to becoming a cultural icon.
What's the legacy you think he leaves behind in American theater?
Well, I think that Sondheim can be mentioned in the same way that you talk about Arthur Miller or Tennessee Williams or August Wilson, you know, any of the great American dramatists. He was serious, he was innovative, he was influential, and this is so important, he gave back. He was dedicated to young playwrights and songwriters. And Jonathan Larson, who wrote Rent, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton, were encouraged by him, even though they wrote very different kinds of work. The seriousness with which they wrote their shows and their individual voices owe a lot to Stephen Sondheim, who, of course, had his own voice. And really, there was no one like him before, and there will be no one like him after.
That's Jeff London, who covers theater for NPR. Thanks for speaking with me.
Thanks, Kelsey.
And that's up first for Saturday, November 27th, 2021.
This weekend version of the podcast has been produced by Andrew Craig, Danny Hensel, and Isabella Gomez Sarmiento.
Our editors, Dee Parvez, Ed McNulty, Jan Stewart, and Ravenna Koenig.
Hiba Ahmad and Michael Radcliffe are our directors.
Our technical directors are Brian Jarboe and Alex Drewenskis, with engineering support from Daniel Shukin, Kwesi Lee, and Josephine Neonai.
Evie Stone is our supervising editor, and Sarah Oliver is our executive producer.
Jim Kane is our deputy managing editor. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Kelsey Snell. Up First is back Monday with news to start your week. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And hear us on the radio, Weekend Edition, on every Saturday and Sunday morning. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org, and have a great weekend.